Welcome to the Hey Boomer podcast, the live show that shares inspiring stories and thought-provoking conversations. Today, we are talking to Darrell Hood about an epic cross-country bicycle trip that he took. My name is Wendy Green, and I am your host for Hey Boomer.
Hello, Hey Boomer listeners. I hope you all are staying warm. It's a little chilly here today. Have you all been following the posts I've been posting to Facebook and LinkedIn? They have been all about adventures. The first was of Winnie the Pooh holding some balloons going up towards a beehive. And I, full disclosure, Winnie the Pooh is one of my very favorite characters. And as he was floating up, the caption said, "As soon as I saw you, I knew an adventure was going to happen." And that is true with our guest today, Darrell Hood. The next one said, "Do more than just exist." That's an important message. And then the third one reminded us to fill your life with adventures, not things. Have stories to tell, not stuff to show. My guest this week, or our guest this week, Darrell Hood, has many adventures to share and many stories to tell, and you are going to love this program. Before I bring him on, though, I wanted to tell you about another area that boomers struggle with occasionally, and that is reimagining their lives after they stop their full-time careers. I talk to people who are feeling unfocused, feeling like they've lost their sense of purpose, like they really don't matter anymore. And they want to feel energized. They want to feel engaged. They want to feel relevant and like their lives matter. And they can. So if you or anyone you know is having those feelings in that situation, please give me a call and we can set up a 30-minute consultation to talk about my 8-week program, Turn Your Retirement Upside Down. In 8 weeks, we are going to cover so many amazing areas to get you back into that rhythm of feeling like life has meaning and purpose, and you are going to love it. So drop me an email. We can chat. And I'll tell you what, in 30 minutes, you're going to start to get some insights anyway. There's no obligation. So let's chat if you would like to. I also wanted to say something about community before I bring Darrell on. Good news today. We reached 300 followers in the Hey Boomer community on Facebook. Woohoo! Way to go, Hey Boomers. So I'm very excited about that. And it's because of you. It's because you all are coming together to form this community, to be part of it. And being part of it is also being engaged with our guest. So I am looking for great engagement, questions, comments, congratulations to him for the things that he's done. This is your community, and we together are really making this something special. So with that, I am going to bring on Darrell and introduce you. Hi, Darrell.
Hey, Wendy, how are you doing today?
I am good. So excited to have you on.
I am too. Thank you so much for having me on your program and looking forward to talking with you about my adventures and getting to talk with some of your listeners.
Thank you. So let me do a brief introduction, Darrell, and then we'll get right into your adventure.
Okay.
So Darrell is a boomer like us. He worked for Delta Airlines for about 30 years. And at the time of his retirement, he was working in load control and emergency response for the airline. Darrell has also been a fireman, a contractor, and an outdoor adventure guide. Not surprised at that one. Darrell has always considered himself a bit of an adventurer and an adrenaline junkie. He says, not to the extreme of maybe base jumping or fire eating, but maybe just a notch below that. He has a love for travel that is off the beaten path and for finding ways to connect with people of the area he's traveling in. In 2014, Darrell decided to ride his bike across country by himself. His wife, Kathy, was off on her own adventure, which we may get to hear a little bit about. Darrell and Kathy now live in Greenville, where he enjoys all the whitewater kayaking, mountain biking, and the wonderful outdoor opportunities this area has to offer. Is there anything I left out, Darrell?
I think you've covered it completely, and you're exactly right. Everything, just a little shout out to Greenville. If you're not from this area, you need to be in Greenville if you love anything about the outdoors. It's got everything you could possibly want. If you don't find somebody to participate and get together with a sport that you like, it's a self-evaluation thing you need to do, because it's really out there and available for everybody.
Greenville is great, yeah. But we don't want it too much.
That's right, yeah.
All right, so take us back. It's 2014. I'm sure there was some pre-planning time before this. So what happened that got you thinking about taking this epic bicycle journey across the country?
Well, as I tell everybody, me and my good buddy Charlie Ginn used to ride. I say used to ride. We just finished a ride in September on the Blue Ridge Parkway. But we started riding together years ago and touring, and Charlie actually got me into the touring. We had been together in Florida and Wyoming and Vermont doing some of our bicycle tours. And I wanted to go on a solo trip. And actually, Charlie had done a cross-country trip himself and kind of gave me that inspiration. So I started planning it. Not a lot of long-term planning, because with some of this, you just don't know if it's going to work out or not. Jobs got to fall in place. Families got to fall in place. Physical capabilities have to fall in place. And you just don't know if all that's going to work out. But in July of 2014, it did. We sold our house on July the 7th. We lived in Peachtree City, Georgia. We sold our house on July the 7th. July the 12th, Kathy took me out to Seattle and dropped me off. So started my trip. She started doing her thing a little bit later on. But I started my trip in Anacortes, Washington. And 80 days later, was loving it, still loving it.
So Seattle, or outside of Seattle, why start there?
The route I chose was called the Northern Tier route. It takes you mostly on the north part of the U.S., up into Canada, back and forth. It's anything but a straight route from point A to point B. You're going south as much as you're going east or north. One of the resources that I've used, and I'll be glad to share that with people, is the Adventure Cycle Association. They have a lot of good information out there for people that are interested in getting into bike touring. Their maps that they provide are wonderful. They keep you mostly off the busy roads, and they kind of give you a direction to go and follow. And it's been proven over the years they've been doing it that their routes are checked out and they're good, better than just trying to follow a map on Google that you don't know if you're on a four-lane highway or how busy the road is. So that was their starting point, was Anacortes, Washington, and the ending point was Bar Harbor, Maine. in between that, I stayed with it sometimes. I didn't, and I didn't follow it so closely sometimes. It all depended on the mountains, the weather, the advice I got from other travelers that I met, and I just stayed flexible with it.
So the planning, you know, I think I mentioned to you in one of the times that we've talked about exploring the Appalachian Trail, right? Yeah. Many years ago. I'm not doing that today.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of planning that goes into that and support that you need along the way. How is that when you're planning a bicycle trip across the country?
Well, I think it's very important to an extent. You do need to plan. You do need to prepare your equipment. There's a lot of different options out there of what you can do when you're getting ready for a ride like this, or even a shorter version of a ride. So you need to make sure that you have the basics understood and you're comfortable with that. You know, your abilities, the equipment you've got, the areas you're going to visit or plan on visiting. But I think it's also kind of crucial that you don't get too caught up in that, that you remain flexible allow things just to happen, because a lot of times when they just happen, it's really a good thing that the way it turns out. And that's been proven in my rides and my buddy's rides that I've done this with time and time again.
But you need to think about your food and your clothing and like first aid, I guess. I mean, some of it you had to think about, right?
Yeah. You do. And like I say, I did. I probably did more planning on that type of thing than I did the actual route selection and everything itself. I was probably more detailed, and some of my buddies that are listening to this go, yeah, he's got a backup to the backup to the backup. And I do like to have that. I like to have something. If this breaks, I've got something else that can get me back on the road, or at least I have a way to fix it, repair it when I'm out. So yeah, the type of equipment I chose, the bike I chose, all of that, I planned that out for quite a while. And it took me a while to get all that gear together. And even after I did that, I still changed some stuff on the bike to make it more personal to me, to make it fit my style of riding and what I planned on doing on that trip.
So, and what about physically? What about physically training for something like this? I mean, what was the longest ride you had taken before you planned 80 days on the road?
I guess the longest ride was somewhere right around 500 miles. And several of them had been in that category. 500 miles is kind of a good trip because you don't have to plan for months. You don't have to think I've got to take off work for a month to do this trip. I can take off for 6 or 8 days and still have a pretty relaxed schedule for 500 miles. But for the training for this ride, there's an old saying, train for the ride or the ride trains you. I did as much training as I could. That's probably not totally true. I did some training. I probably could have done a lot more. It was probably on me only that I didn't train quite enough. But I did ride with a loaded bike. I found out what worked and what didn't work for me, and how I needed to change those things if they didn't work. One of the things that I tried to do was get as much hill time in, because riding on flats, it really doesn't matter how much your bike weighs to a certain extent. My bike normally weighs somewhere around, with the bike and the gear, right around 90 pounds, sometimes a little more, sometimes a little less. But for physical training, one thing I found out that it's easier for me to lose a little weight than it is for me to pay for the equipment that weighs a few ounces less that costs hundreds of dollars more. So I'll try to back off on the weight just a little bit or lose a little bit before a ride. It just makes it easier hauling that weight up the hills.
All right. So it's day one. Kathy has dropped you off. You climb on your bike. Kind of give us a sense of what you felt as you pedaled away that first day.
Well, I can remember it pretty vividly because one of the first impressions that I got leaving was, gosh, this bike is heavy. And things felt shaky to me a little bit. I loaded a little bit different on that first day, probably than what I'd done just my training rides. And I go, wow, this is a lot of weight that I'm going to be carrying for the next, who knows how many days. I really didn't know how many days on that. But it was also leaving the family for, I figured on at least 3 months. It could have been a little bit shorter. It could have been a little bit longer. The time frame wasn't really nailed down to an exact number of days. So that's always a concern in your mind. Is everybody going to be okay? Is it really good for me to be doing this? It's kind of a on your own thing. But the family, I had great support from the family, great support from friends. So that part really wasn't as much of an issue as like, I'm not really doing something that everybody else is not on board with. Everybody was totally on board with this. One thing that also came into mind was that I don't have a good idea of where I'm going today. You know, that was the first day out. It was like, when you're in the towns is probably the hardest time for your navigation and all, because you've got streets that you have to turn on that come up a lot more often than once you get on the road further down your ride. So I think I got lost a couple of times within the first few miles. So my day ended up a little bit shorter the first day than I had planned, not mileage wise. It was like a lot of my shortcuts ended up longer than the original plan, but it ended up shorter distance that I actually made. So it was a learning experience from the very start.
So what were some of your biggest concerns as you took off that first week? What were some of your biggest concerns?
You know, I didn't worry about a lot of stuff. I kind of just took it as it came. I've always been comfortable in the outdoors, so I wasn't worried about the weather, you know, my food, where was I going to get a bath, any of that kind of stuff. That just usually works out. I'm comfortable getting a bath in a stream or in a sink at McDonald's with, you know, as good a bath as you can get in a sink at McDonald's. But that kind of thing didn't really concern me as far as the big items on my mind. And I guess one reason that it didn't is because things just started happening so quickly that were almost like a sign, like, gosh, this is really great. Things are working out not like I planned, but it's because I didn't have that much of a plan. I didn't have, this has got to be like this kind of plan in order for this to succeed. My plan was, I'm going to keep going as long as I can. I feel like I'm going to be able to complete the whole thing, but it wasn't based on this had to happen or that had to happen to make it work.
So it's like you built in flexibility.
Oh, definitely. Flexibility was a key part of this. Then it makes it where you don't get disappointed when things don't happen exactly like they should. On one of my first few days out, I was still on the western side of the Cascades and back to the part where I said, train for the ride or the ride trains you. This was my training day. And the ride showed me pretty quickly that I had not done enough legwork time on the bike to allow for those hills. So I actually just said, this is where I'm staying tonight. I'm not going to make it through another pass. I'm not going to make it through another mountain. And I found a place just on the side of the road that I was able to get my tent in, get out of the way so I wasn't inside of the road, and start it over again tomorrow.
Smart. Now, I'm going to show your blog post website or site, because you have some amazing pictures on there also. But as I was reading through it, early on, you had a very close call with a fire situation. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, the fires, it was a bad time for the forest fires out there in northwestern, in the Northwest. There were a lot of people that were losing homes. The fires were widespread. They were in many different locations. So it made it where you really couldn't try to plan a route around the fires, because if they weren't there today, the fires could be there in that route that you plan for tomorrow. So I chose to just stay with the original route as long as the roads would remain open. I was riding through, at sometimes I was looking back over some of the pictures myself just recently, and I had on a face mask and sunglasses, and the embers that some of the times, especially the last day that I want to tell you about, it got kind of close on one of the days, the embers were actually falling on my arms and they were still warm. And that's when you know that you probably timed this a little closer than you wanted to. I was going up one of the passes there, and I knew they were going to be closing the roads, but I thought I could make it over this one pass in time, because the option, as I said earlier, the option was to a 70-mile detour to get back over the other part of the pass that I needed to get to. And there was no guarantee that that was going to be open when I had done that additional 70 miles. So I made the choice to go on over the pass. Things started kind of deteriorating as I was going up through the climb. I had people coming down the mountain with their furniture, everything they could pack into to trucks and trailers coming down. And some of the people said, you know, it's getting worse up top, and they've closed the road at the bottom for anybody coming up.
Oh.
So at that point, I knew that my exit route that I thought was going to work was no longer an exit route. It was not an option to go back down the mountain. So I chose to flag down a man in a pickup truck. He was nice to throw me in the back. We got over the top, and when we got to the top, we asked the rangers and the fire crew that was up there. They said, "We said, when are you closing the road?" And they said, "The road is closed now. We've got an airdrop coming in 5 minutes." So at that point, I knew the decision to jump in the back of a pickup and get over the top was a good choice. So that was about as close as I got with the fire situation there. The fires were constant for a while, but nothing that close again.
Wow. That sounds kind of scary.
Yeah, it makes you pedal a little faster.
Yeah, pedal a little faster. And thank goodness for that truck, right?
Right, exactly.
Yeah. What about wild animal encounters while you were camping or traveling in the back roads? Did you run into any wild animals that concerned you?
I was fortunate to get to hear and see some great things with the wildlife. I've got to see a few grizzly bears, never got close. And one of my posts, I was talking about coming in contact with the grizzly, and he or she was right in front of me. But when you've got a bear that just kind of shows up right there, and I'm trying to get my camera out and trying to take a picture, but there's a lot of stuff going on in your mind, I guess. Like, is this really a good idea to be doing this, for one? And then the bear is moving so fast that, so I got a picture of my foot, I think, and I got a picture of the shadow of my bike was all I got to prove that I was close to the contact of the bear. But also got to hear wolves, camping on the lakes at night with the loons sounding in the background. It was just wonderful. Coyotes a lot of coyotes. But I like being out there with nature. So they don't bite.
I find it interesting. I mean, for the hiking I've done and some scuba diving, mostly I don't think the animals want to bother you. I mean, you're in their terrain, and if you're threatening them, that's different. But mostly I don't think they want to bother you.
Right. No, I totally agree. I think most people would tell you that, too, that they're much more concerned about being away from you, or is at least as much concerned about getting away from you as you are getting away from them.
Yeah. So you had some wonderful encounters, and I alluded to this in the post when I was talking about this program today, about how with the divisiveness that's going on in the country, you managed to run into some absolutely wonderful, gracious people. Do you have some stories you can tell us about some of the people you encountered?
Oh, there's so many stories. And as I've said before, I don't consider myself really a bicyclist. I'm a person that has found that my favorite way to travel is by bicycle. Mm-hmm. And for one reason of that, and for probably the biggest part of the reason, is it allows you to slow down and take time to meet the people that are out there, that are out there everywhere. And the people that are wanting to help, the people that are just wanting to talk. I've met people in so many occasions. I've got a buddy of mine that I keep up with now, and Matthew may even be out there watching now. But I met Matthew on the bicycle. I think we were in North Dakota at the time. We both happened to wind up in a McDonald's on a rainy, cold afternoon, both of us looking for a camping spot, and ended up within just a matter of minutes. We decided that, hey, this can work out. Let's just get us a hotel room, find us a place to stay tonight, and forget this camping in the wet weather. Matt and I have been friends ever since then. I've met people that just will pull up at a red light, say, "Have you got a place to stay tonight?" I had a guy that stopped and said, "Are you looking for a place?" And I said, "Well, yeah, I am." He said, "I've got a house. It's open to bicycle tourists." He said, "If you want to go there, you're welcome to stay there." He led me to the house. I stayed there. The gentleman makes honey. He has a honey farm, he raises beehives, and it's called Stingers. It's a bicyclist power pack that he sells. REI sells them. Just a neat guy. Stayed in his house. He just left open. He opened the door and said, "Make yourself at home." That just happened time and time again. I stayed with monks. That I also found that through the word of the travelers going the other way, passing me, they said, "You've got to stay in, when you get to Richardson, North Dakota, you've got to stay with the monks." He said, they don't advertise it. You have to just go up, start knocking on doors. And I did. One of the greatest experiences of the trip, getting to meet Father Odo, getting to sing with the monks, sit with them in the church. It was hard to describe, just amazing.
So you really had a lesson on humanity on that trip.
Yeah, how great humanity really is, and how nice people really are. You know, and especially with things that are going on today in our world and everything, you kind of get the picture that it's not like that. And I would have to totally disagree with that. The majority of people that I've come in contact with, either for just a second or for a day, it's just amazing how people are so generous and so kind and so willing to help that have never met you before and allow you to stay in their home with somebody. That happened many, many times. I stayed in a lot of homes that I would just meet, and they would say, please come stay with us. We've got extra room. We've got a basement, or you can just pitch your tent in the yard, whichever.
Wow. And I think what the point you made when you were talking about it was that people are open and friendly, but you have to slow down enough to see them and to have them see you and to be able to make that connection.
Yeah, exactly. We all have got such hurried lives. And I think we kind of use that as an excuse why we believe that the people aren't as friendly or the people don't want to have as much contact. But I think a lot of it's us. We're just too busy to take the time to allow it to happen. Mm-hmm. We slow down and allow it to happen and make ourselves open and vulnerable to people wanting to help. It changes your whole outlook on life and your fellow man and woman.
Yeah, that's a great lesson to share with us. Thanks. You've stayed in some amazing places. Some of what you talked about, like the stealth camping off the road, some in people's homes. But what was one of the most beautiful or memorable places that you stayed at when you went across the country?
Well, there were, again, so many places. There, I stayed in a biker barn one time. Not the Harley Davidson biker barn type, but another gentleman had just dedicated part of his farm to the travelers, bicycle travelers that came through. It was everything he had in there. He had food supplied. He had showers. He had beds. He had a silo that you could sleep in if you wanted to, that he had outfitted. All of it was totally his own good nature and his own generosity that provided for you there. It was a wonderful place. Great people to meet. He was ex-Marine helicopter pilot, super nice, him and his wife. That place was nice. The Abbey was unbelievable. There's an outfit called Warm Showers, or a group called Warm Showers, that allows bicyclists to kind of, it's an app you can use that allows bicyclists to connect to them through that app. I would stop in town sometimes and just send somebody a text. Hey, I'm Darrell. I'm a cyclist coming through. Do you have a place I could stay tonight? Almost always it was a yes. If it wasn't a yes, it was because we're out of town and the house is locked. You can stay in the yard, you know, you can use a hose or whatever, but it was so many great places to stay. It's hard to pick just one.
Yeah, I'm sure it is. Were like national parks, state parks, were those part of the places you stayed?
They were. Again, the part of the flexibility. A lot of times I stayed wherever at the point I got tired. Sometimes I would try to make a destination if it was something that I'd heard that was really a good place to stay or a really good really good part of the country to visit a little while longer. But yeah, I stayed in a lot of national parks, some closed, some open. I camped on sides of the road. I camped in fields, wherever it worked out, in people's yards. I stopped at one lady's house. She was working her flowers. I don't remember even what state I was in at the time, but she was working her flowers and just said hello to her. Then after talking, I said, well, I'm looking for a place to camp. And I said, I don't see anything that's around here that I can find. Do you know of anything? And she said, no, not really. But she said, if you want to, you know, you're welcome to stay in my yard. And it was the funniest conversation I heard that she was having with her friends that night. It was kind of like, you can't believe what I just did. I let this guy come pitch his tent in my yard. I didn't know him from anybody. And now he's sleeping in my front yard in his tent with his bicycle there. And I told my friends, I told my wife, I said, you ought to just be able to hear her on the phone. It's a good conversation she's had.
You made her day.
Yeah, it was funny. Yeah, it was good.
So, Darrell, you started in Seattle. Where was your final destination?
Final destination was Bar Harbor, Maine.
And how many days did it take you to get there?
80 days from start to finish. Could have gone a little bit faster, but like I say, I didn't have a firm timeline. I just knew it probably sometime at the 1st of October. October before I made it there. So it worked.
All right. Out. So you're gone almost 3 months.
Yep.
And what was Kathy doing during that time, your wife?
Kathy had a rough time. She was distraught over me leaving. It was terrible. So she thought the best thing that she could do was go to Italy for 3 months. I don't know how she ever made through the stress of me leaving like that, but she worked at a B&B for a while. She house sat in Turin, Italy, I believe, for a while. She took care of some cats in Turin, Italy, and then she worked in Sicily for a little while. So she had a great adventure of her own while I was off on the bicycle. Hers was probably a little more comfortable than most of my nights, but she had a great time. And that was one of the things, you know, I said everything's kind of got to fall into place. It would be harder to go on a trip like mine if you're thinking, okay, somebody at home is just going to be there. They're going to be at their daily routine, 9 to 5, and you're talking about all your grand adventures that you're having on a daily basis, you know. So it makes it much easier if you're with Kathy having her own great adventures while I was gone. It made it a good trip for both of us.
Yeah. Well, good for you, Kathy. I'm sure you had a great time too. Struggled through that. I know, right? Somehow you communicated with her to let her know when you were going to be in Maine. What was that like to finally reach the end of this trip?
It was, I think probably like any trip like this would be, it's bittersweet. You're looking forward to the end. You're looking forward to being back with family, but it's so different when you're out on the road. That when all you've got to do is eat, sleep, and ride, that's really about all that's on your mind. I mean, your mind has the time to go everywhere, but all you've really got to do is eat, sleep, and ride. So when you come back to the real world or whatever you want to call it, it's a different mindset that you have to put yourself back in. It was awesome to get back with my wife again and for us to start planning our travels together again. But at the same time, it was a little bit sad to think that, okay, this journey that I've enjoyed so much for the last 80 days is coming to an end tomorrow. And it was such a great adventure and such a wonderful life experience that you still find it kind of hard for that kind of thing to end.
Yeah, but how would you say this journey changed you, Darrell? Or did it?
I think so. And what I've been told by family members, and I think it's true, is that it really mellowed me out even more. I think I'm a fairly mellow guy anyway, but they said it's really mellowed me out, make it where I don't feel such a burden to have things always work out right, because in the end, it still kind of works out right. And I don't get too concerned about the little things that just need to be worked around or worked through. I'm very fortunate to have a great family, great friends, and a faith that allows me to understand that sometimes you just have to deal with what's going on, and things will get better.
Well, it's a very Zen statement. You said eat, sleep, ride, repeat.
Yeah, exactly. And it's a great weight loss program. So I think I kept saying I was going to write a book, how to eat anything that doesn't get out of your way and still lose weight. And all you got to do is ride 80, 90 miles a day and it can happen.
I want to share some of the comments that we've had. A friend of yours, Derek Lawhorn, is on. And he says, I tried to get you to come visit for the mountain training, old buddy.
Yeah, he did. And I never could keep up with him. He's a great friend, and he's amazing.
One of our boomers, Doris, says that she has three brothers and one sister-in-law who have made the trip from east to west.
Wow.
Yeah, so she didn't go with them. But
yeah.
Is there a difference going east to west or west to east like you did?
Supposedly, the winds, I don't know if there's really too much of a difference. But supposedly, the winds tend to blow more west to east on a general consensus. There were days and weeks where I totally disregarded that theory completely. But I think if there's a difference, that's kind of what people would base that on. Yeah.
So you had the wind at your back more potentially going west to east.
Yeah, that was the potential. Like I say, I'm not sure if that held up.
So it's true.
And maybe it was me just whining, feeling like the wind was always at my face. But but it seemed like the wind did not stay at my back as much as I planned.
Hmm. And because of your comment about running across so many kind people, June says, there's an old story that you find the kind of people you are. Kind people when you are kind.
I think that's probably true. I think it kind of goes back to my statement about making yourself approachable, making yourself vulnerable. You're not too intimidating when you're an old guy on a 90-pound bicycle, and just riding through town. It's not like you're going to walk off with a widescreen TV or anything. So you're just, people want to, they'll come up and talk to you. I tell everybody it's like having a puppy everywhere you go. So you kind of make yourself, it just lends to being approachable and getting to enjoy talking to people.
So Darrell, you know, I have to ask, do you have any big adventures planned for any time in the near future?
I do have one planned, big adventure. And I kind of want to touch on this just a little bit, that the adventures can come in small packages and still be a big adventure. You don't have to do a cross country ride, for 80 days for it to be a big adventure. Matter of fact, if you kind of look at, if you get a chance to look through the blog, you'll see that I talk about what each day had, how many great experiences. So if you just want to consider that was a short trip, you got a great epic adventure in a 1 week time or a 3 days time. When my buddy Charlie and I were talking about our last ride, we decided to do the Blue Ridge Parkway. But we also looked at doing the North Carolina Outer Banks, which is about another 500-mile loop trip. I think I may try to do that. Like I say, it's a smaller trip. It's closer to home. But again, the great adventures don't have as much to do with the mileage and the distance as they do with the people you meet and the beautiful country you get to see.
Yeah, I think it has to do with your mindset. You bring your adventure with you because of who you are.
Yeah.
So I always like to ask my guests if there's one or two takeaways that you would like to leave the Hey Boomer community with.
Yeah, and I thought about that. And I think there's some good takeaways from a journey like this, and maybe not just necessarily a journey like this, but from what I've kind of learned along the years. And I wrote them down, so I apologize for reading here, but don't get so focused on the grand once in a lifetime trip. As I said, the small trips are just as great. And they take less planning. So in reality, you do have to plan longer. For the longer the trip is, the more planning there is involved. Look at taking, especially if you're just getting into bicycle travel, look at taking short trips. It allows you to find out if it's really what you want to do, less planning involved, and less time you have to spend away from home. So it makes it easier for something like that. Don't overthink the situation. And that could be with a bicycle trip like this, or anything. Some of my kayaking buddies, one of their favorite terms is, you think long, you think wrong. And it may apply more to something like running a rapid than it does life in general. But sometimes we can think ourselves out of doing stuff. If we just say, okay, I've got the time, I think it's going to work out, let's just go for it. What's the worst that can happen? I got to turn around and come home. I'm already home. So what's, you know, how bad can it be? Just have to come back. And something we've discussed earlier, though, but allow yourself to be approachable, slow down, be open to other people with different views, different mindsets, and that are different than you, and find out how much we really have in common, not the differences that we've got to work through. And when you're on a bike, it makes it really easy to do that because you have the time to get to know people more than just passing by at 60 miles an hour.
I love that. I should have called this the wisdom of bike touring, because it does really sound like you learned some wonderful lessons, Darrell. And Thank you so much for sharing those with us.
Well, thank you very much. I really enjoyed it. And it was a pleasure getting to talk with you today and getting to be on your show.
Yeah. And I've got your link to your blog. I've shared it a couple of times. So as you go on your next adventure, we'll be watching.
Good deal. And yeah, feel free to my email. Also, people can contact me through that if they'd like to. There are some resources that I've found over the years that I use and are very beneficial. And I'll be glad to share that with anybody that's wanting that information.
All right. So if anybody wants Darrell's email, you can just send me a comment or a private message and I can share that with you. So let me tell you about who we're going to have next week. She is a very special lady, my guest for next week. Her name is Laura O'Connell. And Laura is a global connector. And she has realized that mentorship goes both ways. You know, as a mentor, a lot of times we think we have the wisdom, we have the knowledge, and we are there to help the other person who may be younger or more experienced than us. But Laura has found that reverse mentorship is equally as powerful. And learning from your mentee and someone younger, as we all know when we're trying to learn how to use our cell phones or things like that, you know, you ask a kid and they're going to show you right away. So we're going to talk about reverse mentorship. Laura works with a lot of international students, helping them transition as they come here to the States for school and working with them and their family. So it should be a really, really interesting conversation. Just wanted to remind you that if you do have any questions or you want to talk about what comes next after the full-time career, drop me an email at wendy@heyboomer.biz. And we can chat about that. And a couple of final comments. Let's see. Elizabeth says, thank you for sharing your adventure with us. It was nice to hear that people were welcoming and nice, especially in this divisive era. And Kate says, it was lovely to have, quote, met you today. Derek has told me a lot about you.
About that. Nice.
And Gail says, this was wonderful. Thank you, Darrell.
So, you guys.
Yeah, everybody enjoyed your story. Thank you, Darrell, again.
Thank you all very much.
I always like to end with a quote from C.S. Lewis that says, "We are never too old to set another goal or to dream a new dream." So please join me again next week and let's keep dreaming together. Let's keep setting our sights out onto the horizon and learning and sharing. I am so grateful for all of you. Thank you so much for joining us today. And I will see you next week. My name is Wendy Green, and this has been Hey Boomer.
Thank you.